Hi, I'm Scott Clapson here on KCIW. This program is Perspectives in Healthcare. It's a new series we have about Oregon healthcare transformation. I am here today with Nanami Godfrey from Coos Health and Wellness. How are you, Nanami?
I am just fine, thank you.
So you kind of have a long title. You want to tell us what your title is?
You chickened out.
I can try it. You're the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist.
Very well done.
It's a long title.
Yes, it is.
So what do all those words mean?
Okay. So this was the Older Adult Behavioral Health Initiative is a drive by the state to try to identify gaps in services for seniors in our communities. And specifically with an understanding of the mental health impact that it has on seniors when they do not have equal access to services. So that is kind of the birth of it. And of course, it's going to look very different in different communities. So Portland and Salem doesn't look like Brookings or North Bend. So it's very important that each one of the older adult behavioral health specialists be a liaison between those communities and the state at large to get a perspective of what seniors are facing in those individual communities and their cultures, because it acknowledges that we are all different and our areas are all different, so the needs are also going to be different.
So like our areas meaning...
So I am the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist overseeing Coos and Curry County. So Coos, even between Coos and Curry County, there are significant differences in what our communities look like. Brookings looks very different than Gold Beach. And that is an important thing when we're thinking about trying to create services to fill those gaps, to fill those needs that our seniors are facing within those neighborhoods and communities.
Yeah, I think sometimes we take it for granted living in Brookings where half the population are seniors, right? And we think that, oh, this is a senior community, you know? And we forget that many of those seniors are experiencing isolation. They're feeling lonely. They're, you know, facing all of these different things, so many changes in life, right? And you and I have talked multiple times that in this culture, we tend to sort of disregard our elders, and there's not really a valuing of that. And it's really cool to see that people in Oregon are starting to value our elders again.
I think that it's also an understanding that aging has become synonymous with certain things in our culture, and it's not necessarily positive things. We think that when we age, we're supposed to get depressed, or at least for a lot of us. Depression is just considered synonymous with getting older, or being socially isolated is also seen as possibility of, you know, the aging consequence. And we need to understand these are areas where we can intervene because they don't necessarily have to happen. It is the way that culturally we've constructed how we age. So what Brookings brings to the scenario is tremendous, because I've been doing a lot of outreach here and I've been blown over by the amount of enthusiasm for volunteer kind of outreach and enthusiasm about reaching out to others and doing something about these problems that we face. So that is the impetus. That is the speak back to the systems that do not work anymore. Because if we go to the systems, if I, in the older adult behavioral health role, were to go to the systems at large and ask them what those problems are, what we're going to do and what I'm finding is a bunch of arguments between those systems, but not really any problem solving. The problem solving happens at grassroots level within the people who have to face the consequences of them.
Can I get an amen? Because I want to say that right now. I totally agree. There's so much power in grassroots, right? And these community-based organizations and these nonprofits and these volunteers and these people that are giving of their time so freely. And you had the privilege, right? When we first met was the day of the first volunteer social at the library here in Brookings in October. And you came in here to the activity center and I was in such a frenzy and I was just like, wait a minute, I've been needing to meet someone in your position and this is so great. You should come to this social. And you got to come and you got to meet 25 other people in this community that care. Well, I think maybe you and I were like 24 and 25. I think there was only 25 of us in the room. But you got to meet 23 other people who care, that who give of their time so freely and care about the people in our community and making it better, no matter who those people are, if they be seniors or young people or whatever. And Brookings is amazing for that. The volunteerism, people move here for that purpose.
And I think that it also provides an opportunity to speak back. The state tends to get driven by a lot of statistics and data, but unfortunately the numbers aren't in a lot of our rural communities. The numbers are going to be in your population centers, your Portland, mm-hmm. your Salem, Eugene. Those are the places that when we're looking at the researchers who are working for Portland State University or we're looking at the state, they're driven by those numbers. And so being a voice and being active and having somebody in my role that can get that data back to the state means that we become on the map. And with this older adult behavioral health initiative, right now it is a priority for the state to start filling those gaps. But if we don't get ourselves heard, those funds will never be made available. So we need to show that we're different and how we're different so that we can start to define the programs that will best meet our needs.
So how are we different? As someone who doesn't live here, I guess is what I'm asking you. Because you have a different perspective.
How's Brookings different than, let's say, the rest of Coos and Curry County or the state at large?
Not even different than, like, what is it here that makes it, besides just the volunteers, what is it? Is it the enthusiasm? Like, what sets us apart? There's a reason why you're so drawn to this place. And it's not just because it's pretty all the time. Right, that's part of it. The banana belt, the Chetco effect.
That's definitely part of it. But I think that there are people who are willing to reach out. I think that, you know, I hear people when I'm talking about Brookings, you know, and even within Curry County. So I'm going to bring up the taboo subject of the rift between Brookings and Gold Beach.
Ooh, she brought it up.
I did.
North and South. She did it. It's true, though. People think that Brookings has a big ego.
Yes. And what I see is, unfortunately, there are these barriers between the conversations so that people don't learn from each other. Everybody's posturing so much. It's almost like when I hear about some of the fights going on between Gold Beach and Brookings, I feel like I'm sitting in one of those meetings with the systems again. And yeah. The problem is when we're so busy looking at problems, we don't come up with solutions. And so when we look at ballot measures, we're looking, you know, a lot of the infighting comes with the way our culture has kind of constructed those conversations, which is about what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when we talk about aging, when we look at aging, we look at what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. The reason people don't feel empowered is because we're so centered on the negative, we don't have anything to start anything positive. Mm-hmm. So just like if I'm going to empower an individual, I need to empower them to see what they have that works. What are the things that they have strengths? And we build from there. So it's really important when I go to any place, whether it be Brookings or Gold Beach, that I try to find that positive starting point. With Brookings, it was very easy for me to do that. People are friendly. People like yourself are natural organizers. They are interested in making things happen. There is a sense of collaboration here that I haven't seen. I think that just with the outreach that I've done and the networking that I've done, there are connections that I am making that are going to, they'll go beyond me. So when I'm done in Brookings, there is going to be a natural momentum, I hope, with older adults that will take on a life of its own. You know, I'm a therapist. I'm a licensed professional counselor. Mm-hmm. And what I've always said to my clients is, I do not want to make you dependent on me. I want you to be empowered to do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So now what I'm doing in this role is just taking that to a community.
Yeah, it's really powerful, right? When we focus on building what we want to create rather than what isn't working,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's part of this healthcare transformation is the system is broken, right? We all know that. And how do we, instead of continually trying to prop up and rebuild a system that's not working, how do we start changing that and looking at different ways of doing things and different ways of engaging people instead of engaging them with them in the same way? When I moved back here to my hometown, it'll be 3 years ago, right about this time, this podcast airs in February 2013. And I remember meeting a lot of these different groups because I was only here, you know, as an anthropology student here to visit my dad. I wasn't moving back here. And we started using the word collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been almost 3 years. And it's interesting because there's probably people that were using that word before me here. But Tom can attest, our tech for the sound here, that we started being purposeful about using this with KCIW here at my job at the Chetco Activity Center. And talking, we're working a lot with these volunteer socials with the Friends of the Library, with All Care Health, mm-hmm. right? Talking about collaboration and this idea of working together and that we're stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very intentional, mm-hmm. right? There's a group of us that keep repeating this word collaboration, and keep demonstrating it through the stuff that we do. And I'm glad that it's making an impact, and I'm glad that it's being noticed, because we've really been definite and purposeful about that collaboration here in Brookings.
And I think that's very obvious with everything that is coming about. I think that this is going to be moving forward. I think that the way that it's going to manifest has yet to to materialize. But remember, it's about honoring the process.
Mm-hmm.
The process, as long as we understand and we play to each other's strengths, then what we do is we empower each other and we pull others along with us. We create a momentum and a vacuum that pulls similar people to us, and that becomes a force to reckon with. So when we think about healthcare and changing systems of care, that vacuum is what we need to do. And like I said before, and I can't say this enough, the answer has to come from the ground up, not the top down. The top has been broken for a very long time. And people are entrenched and they want to keep their jobs. When we have masses of people who are demanding things different and are coming together using their own abilities and skills, it is not anything that anybody can turn away from. It's a momentum that will take over.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything. I mean, we're seeing it all over the place. Things are being restructured, I think, kind of all over the world, where people are just, there's a transition happening and people are realizing that the old ways of doing things aren't working, you know,
right.
Whatever. I mean, we could list climate change. We could list all sorts of different things that are happening in the world. And I think this is just a microcosm in Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much money. There's only so many resources. But the thing that we all have is our gifts and the talents that we bring, right? And everybody has something to give. It might just be telling one person the amazing thing that you just heard someone else say, and you don't realize the impact that that's going to have on the next person that you share it with, or that hello, right? I remember growing up here in Brookings, and I moved to LA after high school to go to college. And people would always be like, you're not from here. Cause I would talk to people. I would say hello to people. And that was just, I was used to that here. I was used to that friendliness, that not just friendliness to people that you know and recognize, because that's one kind of friendliness. It's a different kind of friendliness to be welcoming to someone that you've never seen before and to welcome them into your community. And Brookings, certainly with the community kitchens and so many other things, has done that. And absolutely from the ground up, I really believe that.
I think the term that comes to mind when you're talking like that is guarded. I think we've learned to be guarded with each other. And what we do is not only are our systems barriers to our own health care, but we become barriers to each other. We can't find each other anymore. And we feel isolated. So when we talk about aging and social isolation, just that conversation, that just those couple of lines talk about how we're isolating even as we're growing up. You know, when we think about really, really traumatic events in our lives, how many people have actually had something to share with somebody else? And when you think about some of the things that older people encounter with, you know, the loss of their job, you know, retirement, you know, children leaving the nest. You know, when they live in a rural community, that in itself is a physical isolating thing. But then you have these circumstances that happen because we don't live in extended families. We do not have communities that are networked as well as they used to be. People are guarded with each other. And what we have is a breakdown. So when you have somebody in need, they don't have the normal circle of support that once used to be there. And that is because we don't trust each other. We're more likely to look at each other with suspect than we are to give a compliment. And those are all things that break down the communities and the relationships that will serve us into our old age. So it becomes necessary for us to change the system of care for our aging folks, because it is one minority that we will all grow into. So we will all face that stigma, and we will all face those barriers, because we have constructed them and we must deconstruct them.
You're just preaching in this podcast, aren't you? It's great, though. It's so, these are conversations that need to happen, you know, because you're not the only one that's thinking like this. I meet people regularly that are having this, you know, it's almost like people have had enough,
right?
Of, you know, this isn't working. And instead of continuing to, you know, let things not work, how do we get back to that? How do we get back to... I remember a time when everybody knew their neighbors in Brookings Harbor. And although you see this as a very friendly place, there's still people that it's not like that. You know, not everybody knows who lives next to them, or if they know who lives next to them, as you heard at the volunteer social, a couple people said, "Oh, and I came here thinking I knew everybody's stories." Right. And that really stuck out to me that night, that there's people that have lived here for however long it is, be it four generations, or they've just moved here a few years ago. They think they know, because we see each other on a regular basis, and then we don't see who we don't see.
Right.
And how many of these people are living? I mean, I work at the Chetco Activity Center. We serve seniors. And how many of these people are living in their homes and are socially isolated that we just don't know about because, oh, that's the person who lives down the street. Oh, they're older and we just don't, they keep their blinds shut. Well, why? And do they need anything? You know, do you know who they are? Like, who talks to them at Christmas? Do they have any family? Do they have any children? And that's my passion, is when I was a kid, we knew all of our neighbors. And I'm hoping that in the Brookings Harbor area and across Curry County and maybe even across Oregon, that we can all get to know each other again and realize that, like you said, we live in a culture of fear and there's no reason to be scared of each other. That I really believe that most people are inherently good and want to help, as I find through my volunteerism. So, and I feel sad for those people that are in their homes, that feel lonely, that are aging and maybe going to this, you know, these things that we see people aging and we think that that's what it has to be like. And you're right, it doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, if we can reach out and help some people that are struggling and hurting and give them a more positive, you know, life as an elder in our community, I want to see them celebrated and, you know.
I think that I was very lucky when I came on for this position. Coos Health and Wellness, and in collaboration with the ADRC, Aging Disability Resource Connection, developed a mental health grant. And the mental health grant covers both Coos and Curry County. And the idea is to target the older folks who are struggling emotionally, and to be able to get a clinician to their home, which is completely different than the mental health services as they've been available. Older folks had to get into the office. So the mental health grant would actually, and there is a clinician who does it in Curry County, there's a clinician who does it in Coos County, where they actually go to a person, the call would go into the ADRC, which is based in North Bend. That phone number is 541-756-2000. 2017.
Can you repeat that one more time for our listeners?
541-756-2017.
And who should call that number?
These are folks, you know, the ADRC once had part of the grant was the gatekeeper grant, and it was monies to create people in the communities who had eyes on some of our older residents who were starting to struggle within the communities. A call would go into the ADRC. All that older person had to agree to was that somebody would come to their home and talk to them in their home. That call would go in. They would take the information. A clinician would go out there if they were eligible, and then they could have like 6 to 10 sessions in their home. Mm-hmm. What that does is it gets somebody to that person's home before issues become either chronic, where there is a risk of a fall, they're starting to socially isolate, there's health consequences because they're not getting out, they're not eating properly. All of those things we can see when people are starting to be stressed, they're starting to feel depressed, they're not having the normal contacts with other people where they can process life events. And so this was specifically made, this ADRC mental health grant was put in place to make sure that people were able to access services before it became critical. And that way, keep them in their home, keep them in their community.
Well, that's really important.
Yes.
As long as possible.
As long as possible. Now, there's things that I am hoping on doing that I'd like to build on with the volunteerism in Brookings, and that is to create a way, and I've talked to people with ADRC, and the problem with our monies, because we're so small as a community, both Coos and Curry County, is that our monies are finite. But if there was a way for us to extend our monies by having a volunteer group of people who are willing to check in on their neighbors and relatives and friends and family who are starting to struggle, but not necessarily needing a clinician anymore. So trying to figure out in my role how we could create a collaboration.
There's that word. That's like Pee-wee's Big Adventure or whatever, Pee-wee's Playhouse, right? The word of the day. Let's try that again because that's funny. That's like the word of the day, Nanami. Collaboration.
It so works. But the idea is to build systems of care that collaborate. So understanding what is the strength of Brookings and playing on that to bolster the ADRC mental health grant. So if I have somebody who needed clinical services and needed somebody to go out to them, maybe they're doing better, okay? Mm-hmm. So if they're doing better and they don't need a clinician, I can save some of those monies and I can hand them off to volunteers that keep an eye on the situation. That way I can serve more people who need clinical services while making sure that people are still invested in the care of that individual. And then let's say that they go through another life stressor. It still could create a feedback loop where the volunteer then hands them back to the ADRC mental health grant for a clinician again. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the ways that I envision we could possibly think creatively and build collaborative networks. I don't think it's happening very well within the systems. And I think the first place that that's going to be successful is having something that's in place, like the ADRC Mental Health Grant, that has huge parameters. The parameters there allow us to serve a lot of people in a way that they need because we can go to them. So you take something like that and you bolster it by using the monies wisely. That is, when a person no longer needs clinical skills, you keep somebody around to make sure they're okay, so that we have, now we've developed a feedback loop into what do seniors look like in that community? Mm-hmm. Where are they struggling? What are the issues that they're struggling with? And now that becomes more data for the state.
Well, right, because you have a community, it's a survey, right, that you've...
That is something I have also done. I've created a community assessment survey, and it really was the It was the brainchild of my visits out to Powers in Coos County, because Powers is really the most disenfranchised town in Coos County.
And where is Powers for our listeners that maybe don't know?
Okay, Powers is 42. When you go 101 north to Coos North Bend, you can take in Bandon. There's a junction that is 42, and you can take that to Coquille and follow 42. There's actually a northern part of 42 which goes into Coquille, and a southern part that comes from Bandon into Coquille. So it kind of makes a triangle mm-hmm. with 101. But it ends up in Coquille, and then 42 heads over towards Roseburg. Now, just outside of Myrtle Point, there is a right-hand turn that's called the Powers Highway. And it's a windy road that goes through a bunch of, I mean, I would call them almost canyons, where it's a pretty windy road, and it goes out about 30-something miles out to Powers. And there are small roads, I've heard, that go over into Curry County from there. But it's pretty much, if you're going to Powers, you want to be in Powers, you know?
It's kind of like Agnes.
It's very much like Agnes.
If you want to be in Agnes, you're going to Agnes.
So the community assessment really was the brainchild to try to understand what that looks like to live in Powers and to feed that information back to the state. Because, you know, we really can't even talk about what older folks need if they don't have enough to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, they have public transportation that goes out one day a week to Powers. That's it. They don't have anything else. 50%, the statistics I remember are over 50% of men are over the age of 50. And for women, it is also the same. I think it's 55%. Of the women are over the age of 50. It's in that realm. So you're talking about an aging community. Agnes, I understand, is very much the same. I was quoted that 73% of all folks in Agnes are over the age of 40. So you're talking about aging communities, and you're talking about remote communities that don't have access. It is 2 hours round trip. 2 hours round trip for Agnes to go get groceries. Powers, it's about an hour. Hour one way. So it's 2 hours round trip for Powers, too. So you're talking about not even being able to get groceries. So one of the questions on there, because the state's not considering it. They're worried about, you know, care. And I didn't even know what care is when we're not even talking basic needs.
Mm-hmm.
You ever hear of Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yes.
Okay. So the most rudimentary needs that we have to do with basic needs. That means I have food, I have shelter, all the things that you need to literally live from one mm-hmm. day to another. We can't worry about anything else if we don't have those.
Mm-hmm.
It is a reflection that the state really needs to understand if we're even going to begin to have a conversation. Because if we sit there and we worry about what kind of care somebody's getting, if they're getting appropriate cancer therapy, well, we can't worry about the cancer therapy if they're only eating, you know, one time a day. Because mm-hmm. now we have to worry about nutrition and how much that is impacting the disease state. So that's really important that the community assessment be, I want it in all communities, because I want to show how those communities are similar. Individuals within those communities are very similar in what they're facing and how they compare with other communities. So how does Powers look like compared to Brookings, compared to Agnes, mm-hmm. compared to North Bend? It has questions about things like how do you communicate? I had, and this is completely showing the lack of understanding about rural communities. One of the feedback ways that they have for these programs is they will call the consumers of services. So for aging and people with disabilities, they'll actually have the state will call people and say, so what'd you think of your service? All right. So they do this randomly because they get the names and the numbers despite confidentiality. They have that information. The idea is that everybody is aware that they could call, but the problem is cultural. If I call and I'm working for the state and I'm calling somebody on a track phone and it's only got so many minutes and this person has other needs, and this is a random call that they pick up, and the person is on the phone for 15 minutes, it has a severe impact on that individual's life. Mm-hmm. So these are things that are absolutely conversations that have to go back to the state, because the number one thing that we need to have is cultural sensitivity about the issues.
Oh, absolutely. So can you address that? Because you mentioned earlier, right, that there's a tendency for Oregon to think of us like it's Eugene, Portland, and Salem, and then the rest of Oregon is all the same, and we're not. Can you kind of address what's happening with that and this idea of cultural sensitivity and how that relates to urban and rural in Oregon?
I think that, again, it has to do with data and what they're hearing. You know, it's like this... The loudest voice is going to get recognized. And when you have a bunch of people, if you have population, those numbers drive things. So the problem is, for a lot of rural areas, they don't have voice because they're not being heard. So for someone in a role which is providing data, it is important to have numbers and to show how we are different. Because it is not part... It cannot be part of a dialogue if I don't even know it exists. So if I'm from Portland and all I've known is Portland my entire life, my perspective is Portland. So if I am overseeing a program, but I've only lived in Portland, or I've gone to school at Portland State University or one of the universities up there, but now I'm doing a statewide project that takes in small towns, I don't have the perspective in order to understand that because I haven't been educated on it. So I see my role as not only educating folks on how to empower them, but also educating the state to open its, to kind of broaden its perspective to include those folks who are not necessarily like everybody else.
Absolutely. I'm Scott Clapson here on Perspectives in Healthcare. I am here today with Nanami Godfrey from Coos Health and Wellness. She is the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist. Gosh, that's a mouthful. If you're enjoying this programming here on KCAW, we encourage you to donate. We are a nonprofit and your donations are tax deductible. We appreciate you listening today. So Nanami, it sounds like this is a pretty big undertaking. Right? And you're just one person. What can we do? What can our listeners do to help with this? Right? Because I'm sure we have a number of listeners who are volunteers or who care or who maybe are experiencing social isolation. What can we do?
So as far as the folks who are experiencing social isolation, who may be feeling depressed, there are resources in Brookings, and there are more resources in a lot of other places. The Checo Activity Center, I have to give a plug for. You're welcome. But it's about reaching out. Obviously, the ADRC Mental Health Grant, a call to the ADRC at 541-756-2017 will get you at least someone to talk to who can screen you for your eligibility to get someone, a clinician, to possibly come out and talk to you at your home to discuss some of the things that are of concern to you. It is specifically for mental health issues, but now understand that mental health is mirrored in a lot of ways. So life stressors can bring on anxiety and depression. And while we focus on life circumstances, we need to understand that there's an emotional component. The behavioral or the mental health grant is specifically there to support so that you have time to deal with the adjustment and basically learn how to cope with whatever you're facing, whether it be a death of a loved one, whether it be loss of a pet, whatever you're facing, surgery coming up. These are all stressors that can put people into a mental health state or a mental health crisis. It's about reaching out. It's about asking for help. There are people who are interested in helping you, and you can call the Checo Activity Center. It's about getting out. It's about making relationships and connections so you have a circle of support and you're not alone anymore. Get back to your question.
Absolutely. So, those of us that are listening, well, I guess you kind of answered it in part of a way. You could volunteer at the Chetco Activity Center. Listen to me plug it.
I think what it also is about, we've been made to feel ashamed of our experiences. And a lot of the reason that people are isolated is because we don't understand that the things that we feel are being shared by many people. Why don't we know that? Because nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. So the fact is that being willing to talk about your experiences, like with the community assessment that I've brought out, Scott Clapson, who is moderating this, has access to the community assessment. I encourage anybody who's willing and able to fill out the community assessment to say what your life experience has been, and to so that I have something to submit back to the state to let them know what it's about to live in Coos and Curry County. The more information, the better. That's another way you can help. Reaching out, being aware of the people who are around you, noticing, you know, somebody who's impeccably dressed, who's always looking wonderful, all of a sudden they're starting to come out and they're looking disheveled, they're not dressing, obviously not showering. These are people that we need to be making an effort to reach out to. You know, certainly communication with significant others of that person, whether it be family members or whatever, to let them know that you're concerned. You know, I just saw your father and he's not really looking very well. I usually see him on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Having those folks be aware of it so we can create a circle of support for people who are struggling. Eyes, being willing to care, being willing to voice your concern and reach out to others so that we can be there for each other is really important too.
Wow. You're really cool. You know that?
Thank you.
Tom knows, we've been talking about some of this stuff for a while as a community, as those of us grassroots volunteers here and needing these conversations to be happening and knowing that there's other people that are having them outside of our community, about our community, and how we can come together and knowing that we have the support, and that knowing that, you know, we're on the right track is really helpful.
I'm going to say this because it was said when I, at one of our meetings for the older adult behavioral health specialists, we get together every other month and we do a training and whatever. We don't really have a model to do this work. They're looking for models. They're looking for things that work in communities. And I think that Brookings is, I mean, if I were to have a poster child of what could be, if I had a poster child of the foundation needed to start something that actually has a chance of changing, creating real change, I would hold up Brookings as that model. And I would love to hold Brookings up, and I would love to take it back to the state and say, okay, you cannot discount us anymore because this is working, and here's the data you need to prove it. And that's kind of where I am. So I'm interested when I talk to people like Scott Clapson, or I talk to Renee Balcom over at Liberty, yes, Advocacy Group.
We love them.
What I'm doing is I'm creating momentum and organic enthusiasm about something that needs to take to be birthed here. Mm-hmm. And once it is birthed here and it is, we can show what has done that. We actually, you know, I'm monitoring it. I'm talking to these people, but it is organically driven. People who live within Brookings are the ones to determine how this is going to manifest. What do we need to be doing? I'm just like the cheerleader over on the side going, yeah.
Right.
But the point is getting people together and letting it be organic, because it's only the people that live within the community that need to drive this forward. I do not want to make anyone dependent on me. If I'm doing my job right, I'm working myself out of a job.
There's a really great adage or whatever going around on the internet. And it's a quote that I've heard attributed to multiple people. But it's leaders don't create more followers. Real leaders create other leaders, right? And it's this idea of, like, it's not about Scott Clapson, right? Because sometimes I hear that name a lot, and I want people to remember that it's not about, you know, Scott Clapson or the one person that's doing the work. It's about showing other people that it's really just that I'm enthusiastic, you know, and there's other people that have that capacity to be just as enthusiastic. You know, I bring my own gifts, but at the same time, it's about enthusiasm, and it's about caring, and it's about finding that enthusiasm for the part that you care about. And I happen to care about people feeling lonely and having enough to eat, right? And so that outcropping of that has been this, you know, these groups coming together and these people working together and not feeling like they're isolated anymore, you know, because I in turn felt isolated growing up here for my own many different reasons. And so now I work for that, you know. I know what it's like to not have enough to eat as a young person growing up in a retirement community where it was hard for my parents to sometimes find work. And, you know, realizing that a lot of those things make us who we are, and finding that enthusiasm for what you as the listener, right, as obviously Nanami has found her enthusiasm, and giving that gift, you know, it's really important. And I'm really excited that you think of us as a model. And I'm really excited that I've been brought back to help be a part of this change, because I think it's really cool. I hear this actually not just from you, but from a number of different people, that Brookings is kind of this, you know, this space that people are just like, whoa, this is really cool. And I hear it on a regular basis. And it's not because it's the beautiful coastline. It's a beautiful coastline. It's beautiful weather most of the time. It's more than that. There's other things that make this community what it is. And it's that volunteerism, and that there's something about this place that, you know, no place is perfect, but there's certainly that thing that's making a difference here. Nanami, as we come to the end of this podcast, because I'm hoping that we talked about you'd come back for a second podcast to talk about the events that we'll be having at the Chetco Activity Center, because you have some really cool presentations. Can you give us a little teaser on what those presentations are about? And
I have developed two presentations, and they really are intimately linked. One of them we've been talking a lot about is social isolation. And again, I take a different perspective. This is not about an individual suffering with social isolation and what to do for them. Although that is part of it, it's not the sum total of it. It's about looking at the way we construct the idea of how we age and understanding how we create social isolation with what people who are getting older face in our society, and how that literally becomes a setup for some of the things that we see a lot of our older folks experiencing. And that is really, that training is really to start creating a dialogue and get people thinking about ways to intervene. And that would be the first one. That's the first one. And the reason I want to do that is because it's to build that enthusiasm. To build the enthusiasm that, no, we don't have to accept it as it is. And that when we make a change in the way we age in our culture, we're not just doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for all future generations. It's like I said before, it is the one minority that we are all going to grow into. And so therefore, appreciating and understanding systems that we can build and ways of interacting that are going to be empowering as we age, so that we can see it in positive terms rather than this sentence that we have to endure, is really important, because then that goes into the second presentation, which is about elder suicide. And elder suicide is very seldom talked about as its own entity. We talk about suicide, but we don't understand the difference between older folks and the suicide that ends up taking place for our aging families and friends. It is different. It is remarkably different from people who are younger. Just one of the things to really wet the whistle, and that is the fact impulsivity is known to be a characteristic of young age. When people are older, they tend not to be as impulsive when they do things, and that's what we're finding in suicide. When people make the decision to take their lives, older folks tend to be more effective in that. For every 4 suicide attempts, 1 attempt is successful in the elderly. In one research study, I actually saw that the ratio was 58-1, and that was the one that was, I think it was a little generous as far as the numbers. I think it probably was more. It was probably like 1 to 124. It wasn't replicated as easily as the 1 in 4 for the elderly folks. So for every 4 suicide attempts, we have 1 successful completion in our older folks, specifically for men over the age of 85.
Wow. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. So the first part is preventative. The second part is about what do we do.
Absolutely. Nanami, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast today. We'll be having a second part to the podcast. It'll be talking more about what these presentations are and the dates and how you can participate as members of our community. Thank you, Nanami, for coming.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you.
I'm Scott Clapson here on KCIW. This has been Perspectives in Healthcare, a new series we have on KCIW about Oregon healthcare transformation and awesome things that are happening in our state. We are a nonprofit here at KCIW. We do appreciate your donations. Your donations are tax deductible. We've been talking today with Nanami Godfrey from Coos Health and Wellness. She is the Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist. I finally got it right at the end of the podcast.
Yay
me. Thank you for collaborating with me, Nanami, and for all the people that you reach out to in Coos and Curry County. We greatly appreciate your work, and we hope that we have encouraged some other people to get enthusiastic about reaching out to each other from this podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. You can help support KCIW by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign to help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you for listening.